administration come from publications aimed at a military audience. One of George, for example, last week's magazine, this is called Army Times, ran a story with the following headline: An Act of Betrayal. And the subtitle, In the Midst of War, Key Family Benefits Face Cuts. So his biggest critics, George W. Bush, ran on a platform of promising to improve the lives of American soldiers. And wherever he could cut from them, he's been happy to do it. Never mind the stupidity of it. I mean, these are people putting their lives on the line right now in a major war scenario, that being Iraq, a major occupation, a lot of terror. They are the target of a lot of terrorist activity, and you want to cut their money now? I mean, how smart is that? And never mind that you ran on a platform that you'd give your soldiers more. So here's the Army Times that ran a story with the headline, An Act of Betrayal, and the subtitle, In the Midst of War, Key Family Benefits Cut. The article went on to assert that there have been, a string of actions by the Bush administration to cut or hold down growth in pay and benefits, including basic pay, combat pay, health care benefits, and the death gratuity paid to survivors of troops who die on active duty. Just about every apparent promise of financial generosity, Paul Krugman writes in today's New York Times, that this administration has made, other than those involving tax cuts for top brackets and corporate contracts, has turned out to be non-operational. No Child Left Behind got left behind, or at least left without funds. AmeriCorps got praised in the State of the Union address, then was left high and dry in the budget that followed. New York firefighters and policemen got a photo op with the president, but very little money. For that matter, it's clear that New York will never see the full $20 billion it was promised for rebuilding. So, therefore, why shouldn't soldiers find themselves subject the same kind of bait and switch? What you might have expected, Krugman writes, this administration to treat the military differently, if only as a matter of sheer political calculation. After all, the military needs some mollifying. The Iraq war has turned increasingly nightmarish, and deference toward the administration is visibly eroding. Even Jessica Lynch has, to her credit, balked at playing her scripted role. So what's going on? One answer is that once you've instilled a Scrooge mentality throughout the government, it's hard to be selective. But I also suspect, Krugman writes, that a government of, by, and for the economic elite is having trouble overcoming its basic lack of empathy with the working class men and women who make up our armed forces. Some say that Representative George Nethercutt, and he's from Washington, his remark that progress in Iraq is a more important story than deaths of American soldiers, probably told the tale. And remember what President Bush said back in July. He said there are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there in Iraq. My answer is, bring them on. We got the force necessary to deal with the security situation. Well, those are words I think he will come to rue. Those are the words of a man, Krugman writes, who cannot imagine himself or anyone close to him actually being in the line of fire. Publications like the Army Times are obviously going off the reservation, but retired military officers like General Anthony Zinni, formerly President Bush's envoy to the Middle East, have started to offer harsh, indeed unprintable, assessments of administration policies. If this disillusionment spreads to the rank and file, the politics of 2004 may be very different from what anybody expects. Preston, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hey, Preston.
I was listening to KNRC's Sunday show, Beyond the Beltway, and they had on some military people, and they received a lot of calls from military people. It was very interesting. And one of the problems they have with what we're doing in Iraq is that the service people are having to put in these shifts of like 12 and 16 hours. And I think Shinseki, you know, this was part of the point he was trying to make, that you're going to need more troops.
Eric Shinseki, okay. who was forced to resign, I think, or did resign. But when he said you're going to need more troops, Wolfowitz said wildly off the mark. And in fact, Shinseki was right.
And
it isn't only that they have to work these long shifts. They're calling up reservists who never expected to be deployed for these lengths of time. And you can't go come home just when your term is up. You have to come home when your unit is sent home. So you have to wait. And there are instances of people, first of all, who are due to be finished with the reserves. And in 2 days, they're called up to serve in Iraq, to be deployed to Iraq, 2 days before their term is finished. And they can, and people who don't know if their jobs are going to be waiting for them, people who are trying to make do on reduced incomes. I mean, it's awful for families. And this is what happens when you have an all-volunteer military who was promised one thing, but another thing materializes.
Yes. I wonder how much of the current job growth that we have in this country, how much of that is related to military recruitment, because I know they're doing a lot of it quite actively in the colleges and in the...
Well, and how much of it is also related to people filling the jobs of those who are
right.
deployed overseas?
Yes, good question.
That is a good question.
I wanted to say something real quick about the Denver Post.
Yeah.
I missed the style section, and...
It could use a little more style, to be perfectly honest. I guess they won't be writing about me anytime soon, yes.
But I was happy to see today in the scene section they had a piece on a hip-hop artist named Wyclef Jean.
Do you know that he sang a song at JFK Jr.'s funeral?
No, I had no
yeah,
idea.
He did. He was one of his. He was one of JFK Jr.'s favorite artists.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Okay.
Okay. So, well, so you're giving the Denver Post high marks for that?
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Okay, Preston, thanks very much for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150, noon to 3, KNRC.
Don't settle for half the talk. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. It's common knowledge that household dust carries germs, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, pesticides, things you don't want your family breathing in. And when you realize that dust can be suspended in the air 8 hours before it settles, then you want a vacuum that traps the dust in the bag. You want a vacuum that cleans the air in your home as it cleans your floors. You want a hypoallergenic 8-pound Oreck XL. A hypoallergenic Oreck features a 7-stage filtration system that traps over 99.99% of particles 250 times smaller than the width of a human hair. When you turn on a hypoallergenic Oreck XL, there's never a cloud of dust in your face or a foul odor. Call 1-800-989-4200 for free literature or a free 30-day home trial. That's 1-800-989-4200. It's the vacuum designed with your well-being in mind.
Whoa, look out, coming through.
Oh, I'm really glad we came. I wonder if Deb is here.
Hey, Kelly, John, it's so good to see you. I was hoping you'd come.
Hey, folks, have you called your doctor yet about the purple pill called Nexium? Well, perhaps you should wait till you get home. Find out if Nexium Esomeprazole Magnesium is right for you and call 1-877-4-NEXIUM or visit us at purplepill.com.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Hi, I'm Doug Kellett. Mark your calendar now for the opening of Winter Skate at One Boulder Plaza, Saturday, November 22nd. Ice skating will be free that day for the public from 4 to 10 o'clock at night, and you can meet local celebrities and sip hot chocolate all while enjoying Boulder's newest gathering place. Located just a block off the Pearl Street Mall, Winter Skate at One Boulder Plaza is on 13th between Walnut and Canyon. For information on skate rentals and hours of operation, call Boulder Creek Events at 303-449-3825.
Only one national wireless company gives you an automatic credit for a dropped call. AT&T Wireless, the best in wireless service. Call 888-MY-M-LIFE today. That's M-Life, your mobile life made better from AT&T Wireless.
AM 1150, KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kellett. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1:56 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and my producer, Joe Anderson, tells me that he hears on stations like the Walmart across the way. I don't know why he's even listening to them. That if you even talk to an Army recruiter, You can enter to win abs tickets and nuggets. In other words, they have all these forms of bribery. You can enter to win abs tickets or nuggets tickets, or you might meet one of the players. And so if you just talk to an Army recruiter, so it sounds to me like they're desperately seeking recruits. And also we're seeing reports that draft boards are being restaffed again. So Charlie Rangel, who is the first to call for Rumsfeld's resignation or firing, has long thought that if the children of the elites were subject to a draft, they might not so easily send people to war. So 26 House Democrats are calling for Rumsfeld to be fired. The 9/11 panel has issued a subpoena to the Pentagon. The Federal Commission investigating 9/11 attacks stepped up pressure on the Bush administration to cooperate by issuing a subpoena to the Pentagon. Members said they were still weighing a subpoena to the administration for Oval Office documents that President Bush received in the days prior to 9/11, although the panel has so far as I'm aware, not yet issued that subpoena. The sergeant who was almost charged with being cowardly, he's now charged with dereliction of duty. They bumped it down. He said that they branded him a coward, that in fact he just had panic attacks, that he was willing to stay and do the job, but when he saw a man who'd been cut in half by fire and bleeding from all orifices, he said he couldn't stop vomiting. He said he was shaken. So I don't know if he's malingering or not, but you know, if you see that for the first time, ooh, I don't know. You have to develop a very thick skin, don't you? And then I'm getting emails from some of you who are talking about the CBS decision to not run the Reagan miniseries. A lot of you think that CBS has not distinguished itself. Janklow. Remember Representative Bill Janklow, the guy who was so arrogant that he thought he could speed his way anywhere, and he wound up killing a vet who's the father of a couple of kids, and the guy was a firefighter, and anyway, there's going to be a trial here. The jury is going to hear a veneer miss, but they're not going to hear of all the speeding tickets that Representative Bill Janklow, who is a very powerful guy from South Dakota, he was a very aggressive attorney general, so he should know what the law says. I'll be very interested to see how that trial goes, because I think this is a guy who needs to resign. I'm Enid Goldstein. Don't you resign from listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live, because we got one more hour to go, and we'll be joined by Todd Oppenheimer. We'll be discussing the false promise of technology in the classroom. I can't wait to see what he has to say. He's an award-winning journalist. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. Keep it right here.
Both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 57 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Kohl's. Inspectors from the U.S. Postal Service are still trying to track down the person or persons who made off with about 750 pieces of mail in the Evergreen area. But while they do their job, they'd like your help. Inspector Larry Holt says there are ways in which you can reduce the possibility of having your mail stolen.
You want to retrieve your mail from the box as soon as you can. You know, and most people work and they're not always going to be able to get there, you know, immediately after the mail's delivered, but that's a possibility.
Holt adds that if you're going out of town, get a vacation hold for your mail or have a neighbor pick it up. The Colorado State Patrol and the Jefferson County Coroner's Office are working to establish a positive identification of the male body that was found inside an SUV that had crashed down an embankment along eastbound I-70 near the Morrison exit. A hiker last evening found the crash vehicle 250 feet down the embankment. Speculation is that the man could be 45-year-old David Wolf, who was reported missing in September. The importance of Veterans Day sometimes sails over the heads of our youth, but not at Stanley Lake High School. Each year, students gather on the Westminster campus to honor those who have served their country. A guest speaker at today's ceremony was retired U.S. Navy Captain John McGrath.
I remember that I was proud to serve during Vietnam, and I'm proud of my service afterwards. So that's a pretty big thing right there. You know, we served our country, and we tried to help another country that needed our help against an aggressor, and our country does the right thing.
Captain McGrath is in a position to comment with authority on Vietnam. He was in prison for nearly 6 years and wrote a book on his experience, Prisoner of War, 6 years in Hanoi. He thinks the U.S. did the right thing in World War II and is doing the right thing in Iraq. A series of blasts rocked Baghdad today, sending plumes of smoke rising from the U.S.-led administration's headquarters. Officials say three rockets landed in the high-security Green Zone area of the Iraqi capital. No one was injured, but several vehicles were damaged. The increasingly common attacks have underscored the growing boldness of guerrillas fighting coalition forces in Iraq. Meanwhile, the U.S. civil administrator in charge of Iraq, Paul Bremer, made an unexpected visit to Washington today. A U.S. official says that Bremer is expected to talk with top officials about security and the political transition in Iraq. After 5 days of deliberation, a Texas jury found New York millionaire Robert Durst not guilty of the first-degree murder of his elderly neighbor. Dick DeGaren, one of Durst's lawyers, congratulated the jury today.
We knew that some people would say, well, if he cut up that body, I can't be fair. But these people all intellectually saw that there are separate issues, and they kept those issues separate. And I have to congratulate them for the long, tough job that they did.
Durst had admitted to shooting Morris Black in September 2001 and then dismembering his body, dumping it into Galveston Bay. During the trial, Durst testified that he found Black in his apartment with a gun, and during the struggle, his elderly neighbor was shot in the face. Prosecutors in the case said they were disappointed in the ruling, but remain respectful of the decision and the jury process as a whole. Kurt Sistrunk, one of the prosecutors in the case, said charging Durst with the crime of abusing a corpse was never considered because they thought the first-degree murder charge was more appropriate. Durst's attorneys said they now expect their client to be charged with jumping $300,000 bail in connection with the case. A retired nurse from Indiana is accused of killing her husband and then rushing off to keep a hair appointment. Barbara Garcia has been charged with the murder of her husband. Police say she poisoned his soup with insulin, then repeatedly injected him with the substance while he slept on October 30th. She then allegedly left him in the garage, went to have her hair done, and passed out Halloween candy the following night. Police say she dumped his body in the forest where it was discovered a week ago. As for a motive, police say Garcia has some gambling losses, misused some of her husband's assets, and didn't want him to find out. Pollution isn't just bad for your lungs, it's bad for your heart. A new study found daily exposure to even safe levels of air pollution is being linked to more deaths from cardiovascular disease. Sulfur dioxide and carbon monoxide are the most dangerous pollutants. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche head into the HP Pavilion tonight to take on the San Jose Sharks. The Avs are unbeaten in their last four outings. Denver Bronco quarterback Jake Plummer says that his broken foot is feeling better, and he plans on being in the game Sunday against the San Diego Chargers. The Broncos, though, will have to make do without fullback Mike Anderson. He's been suspended by the NFL for a month after a random drug test showed marijuana in Anderson's system. Kohl's 40 to 50% off sale Tuesday and Wednesday only, 8 a.m. to midnight. 40 to 50% off hundreds of items. Seniors save an extra 15%. See store for details. Kohl's, give happy, get happy. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over a dollar a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the Buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by MLT Vacations, and really not a lot going on this Veterans Day. We are accident-free. We do have the lights not working. It's going to be Wadsworth and Stanford, so treat that as a four-way stop. High Country has some slippery spots, so make sure you watch for those on all the passes. Other than that, enjoy your nice drive. Save 20% on airfare to Puerto Vallarta. Worry-free vacations, round-trip airfare, and seven-nights hotel is only $532 per person. Call your travel professional professional or visit worryfreevacations.com for more details. Restrictions apply. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Looks like it'll be nice and mild for today, but cooler weather is on the way. We'll see a mix of sunshine and a few clouds this afternoon with a high of 57. Just a few clouds around tonight, 28. Then partly cloudy and cooler for Wednesday. We'll see a high of only 46. And by Thursday, we'll see a chance of snow showers and a high near 40. For the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 57 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150, KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and with me in the studio, Todd Oppenheimer. He's an award-winning journalist. His new book, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and How Learning Can Be Saved. Thank you for joining us today, Todd.
Oh, you're very welcome.
When I saw the title of your book when it came in, I said, we have to have him on. And the fact that you live in San Francisco doesn't hurt either. That you won the National Magazine Award for your Atlantic Monthly story on this subject. You've written for a number of publications, Newsweek, The Washington Post, Columbia Journalism Review, and so on. Talk about the false promise of technology in the classroom and why you wrote the book, because those of us who care about education, when I began to see the reports of all this technology in the classroom, as though that were going to, as though technology were going to replace fine and sensitive teaching, creative teaching, the good teacher, I thought this is just techno BS. This is what it is. So I was delighted to see your piece in the Atlantic Monthly, and I was happy to come upon your book. So tell me why you decided to write the book.
Well, the genesis of the book actually started as I was working in technology for Newsweek, helping to produce a lot of the multimedia material that we were doing in the early 90s. And as I got closer and closer to the industry, I realized that the material that they were producing for the net and multimedia CD-ROMs, all the things that were the rage in the mid-late 90s, were much more empty and superficial than I thought I was getting into.
There's less here than meets the eye.
Exactly. You know, the old emperor has no clothes story. So it worried me more and more. And then I watched how electronic technology was homogenizing all the professional skills. Now you see, you could be a radio editor or a graphic designer or anybody. They're all keyboard operators now. All the variety of fine tactile skills are all being homogenized onto what you see on a screen and what you punch.
So you don't have to be an artist anymore. You don't have to be trained as a graphic artist. You just get something like Paintbox.
Exactly.
And you can do it by having computer skills.
Yeah, I mean, obviously someone's got to have a little more to it than that. But grossly spoken, yes, that is very much true. So I thought, well, is this a great thing or a bad thing? And either way, the answers will probably be most evident in how technology is affecting children, because children are so impressionable and they take to it with such zeal. And the most, if you want to look at children, we have a test tube waiting to be seen, and that's the classrooms. There they are. So I started looking in schools and talking to teachers, and as I would listen to teachers tell me about what they thought and the frustrations they were facing and how they thought it was skipping past, you know, really fundamental tactile experiences of how kids can reason and understand how things work, making things with their own hands and figuring out problems the way they used to before technology came in and created these shortcuts. I thought, wow, there's a big, big story here. This is not small. So that's what got me started.
What are some of the ways, what are some of the shortcutting that deprives children of skills that we all had to learn? Give me an example of a concrete example of how that plays out.
Well, I think one of the best examples I saw in Harlem, I was watching a computer lab there, and these students were sitting around using a program for creating graphic design models of some kind. And I watched this one guy creating very intricately woven patterns of lines and all kinds of things. And I was just stunned. And I thought, wow, okay, now we're going somewhere. Now I see why technology is such a great thing. This kid is doing this amazing stuff. And then he just dumped it all of a sudden. He just erased it. And I thought, now I'm really impressed. This guy's so good. He can create this thing, dump it, and make another one. And then I realized it was he went up to the menu and pulled down another almost nearly complete version. These were automatic functions. He was not doing any geometry, any sketching, nothing. It was an automatic function to create these things. And he wasn't having to think through any of the principles of perspective and calculation that geometric design normally teaches kids. So there's one example. Another example is a very popular program you've got in the schools, is these things called KidPix or HyperStudio, and what they are children's versions of PowerPoint presentations. And the teachers just think these things are marvelous, and kids spend many hours mastering them. And what they are is really nothing more than what children used to do with, you know, scissors and paper and glue and pencils, you know, writing their own stories. And if anything, they're a lot less creative. I talked to some little students in second and third grade, and they preferred the old tools. Computers would crash on them, and they were inflexible in ways that, you know, if they wanted to cut it themselves.
And it's fun. I don't care what people say. There's something very tactile.
Exactly.
I like that experience of cutting out stuff instead of sitting, for some reason, sitting in front of a computer. For me, it instantly tenses my back. I don't know why, because
right.
It's just sitting, and I don't feel that way in other sitting situations.
Right.
But the minute I get in front of a computer, even though I'm at ease in front of a computer, there's some kind of a tension. And whereas when you're absorbed in the concrete cutting, pasting, creating a collage, let's say, of something, there's something that flows out of it. It's there's more consonance in the experience.
Exactly. And the more ways that you have, that your whole body and your whole being can engage with an activity, the more you're going to get out of it. One teacher put it to me very plainly. In fact, it was a former teacher, so someone who had spent many years in the classroom. She said, you know, we always were taught, the more muscle, the more memory. And that pretty much says it all.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that when you throw your whole self into
right.
it, the whole greater than the sum of the parts emerges.
Exactly. Exactly.
It triggers almost like, for example, one of the off the top of your head, RXs, if someone's feeling blue, go swimming for 20 minutes, and it releases the endorphins, and your system
right.
feels better. So if you're feeling cramped and tense,
right.
do something physical.
Right. And as another illustration of that axiom, when I would talk to children who were working on a computer and ask them what they were doing or you know, anything, I could barely get their attention. And if they talked to me, they would talk to me superficially and then dump the thing and then go on, click around to another thing. When I would visit low-tech schools, some of the most notable being the Waldorf schools, where kids are, you know, doing art projects and knitting their own flute cases and stuff, and I would talk to them about their projects. They'd look up. They'd explain to me with great passion what they were doing. They'd get all excited. We'd have this great conversation, and you could just see the engagement of their whole beings in this thing. And I would even see this in high-tech schools, where one sponsored by Apple, these kids had done all these fancy multimedia projects, and all the kids were saying, wow, cool. And then suddenly it came time for some kids to show their physical projects, the things that they had made out of clay and wood and cotton and things like that. And all the kids went nuts and said, wow, look at that, and came up and started asking all their fellow classmates, how'd you do that? How'd you make the smoke? And they were just all the more engaged. And this was a school that celebrated computer technology.
What's intriguing is, if it's so easy, and these complicated things that are just functions that you can download very easily and get rid of very easily and reaccess whenever you want, then I think what that breeds is a sense that nothing has value. When you have made it yourself and you spend all the time and you create the smoke and you create the log cabin and you create whatever it is that you're making or the bridge, and you've done it, you have a better appreciation. It has more value. And the thing that everybody talks about, and particularly where you come from, San Francisco, which is where I used to come from, the whole idea of self-esteem or confidence. When you make something, you have and you've endured the trials and the problems that come up in the creation of this thing. That's how your confidence builds.
That's right. And that's completely right. And the principle there is teaching youngsters about perseverance and about the virtue of their will, using their will with something. And again, referring to Waldorf schools, just because, I mean, Waldorf schools have their problems, but they're very fascinating, and a portrait of them is the final chapter in the book. And they believe that one of the reasons they don't believe in technology is they firmly believe that the the product of what you do, of what you have and play with, must be commensurate with the effort that it took to get that thing. There must be a sort of a balance between
right.
the consequences of this thing you did and the effort you put into it. And the problem they have with technology is you get this multitude of riches with a press of a button.
With no effort at all.
With no effort at all.
So does that instill the idea in kids? I want to talk to you about what the upside. My guess, if you're just tuning in, Todd Oppenheimer, winner of the National Magazine Award, investigative journalist, The Flickering Mind. Should I say investigative journalist
yeah,
or journalist?
That's fine.
Is that good? His new book, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom and How Learning Can Be Saved. So you get this riches, this embarrassment of riches by pressing a button, essentially. So you don't have an appreciation. It's like the kid who's so rich that he or she has no appreciation of what it took to buy those $300 sneakers. It's just, you know, Mom, let me have your credit card and I'm going to buy whatever I want. Is there an upside to these kids? Because, you know, they can figure out these systems. The adults have no idea how to figure out these computer systems, and they call their kids in to get them out of computer hell. What's the upside? Is there an upside? Do we know if there's an upside?
Well, there is some upside. One of the things is that, you know, that we all marvel at that, you know, when we see that. And sure, it's a true story. And we roll over and play dead because of it. The thing that we forget is that, they can become just as expert at that a little later. They don't have to become that expert at age 6 and 7 and 8.
And at what price, too?
That's the problem. The price at that age is very, very steep because they're not getting engaged in these other activities. They're not outside playing with their peers. They're not sitting and reading stories and writing their own stories. If they wait till they're age 12, 13, or whatever to sort of understand the guts of a computer, they're going to get it just fine at that age, and they're going to even get it deeper. They're going to be able to build their own circuit boards, and which is a good thing to do. That's one of the upsides that I find, that in high school, a great way to use computers is to teach kids how, you know, modern electronics works. How do you make your own software program? How do you wire a circuit board? How do you fix a computer? I mean, these are important skills that no child should... I won't say no child, but that should be certainly an offering to every high school student before they graduate. And most schools are not doing that.
If you are interested in talking to Todd, if you're a teacher, if you're a parent, if you're a student, let me give you the number, 303-382-1150, 303-382-1150. Let's go to Debbie in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid and Todd Oppenheimer on AM 1150. Hi, Debbie.
Pleasure to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
I'm a volunteer. I'm also a graduate student in a related topic area, but I'm also a volunteer at a magnet school. And recently, we were trying to help the kids look up some information. I took my kids that I was working with over throughout the library, trying to find their related information there first. And some of the non-volunteers, the paid teachers, were just teaching them to Google.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was, I didn't think it was right. I didn't think that they were going to learn to try and find the information rather than to ask a tool a question on the related topic.
So you're saying that you lose a certain richness. You know, it was Nicholson Baker, I think, who did a piece in The New Yorker
right.
about goodbye to the file, physical filing
yeah.
system in the library, the card catalog.
Right.
And boy, there's the tiny Larkspur Library. You can still use the card catalog there
yeah.
when you go back.
Yeah.
But in many of the libraries, the card catalog system is gone. And I love that card catalog system. I can find all kinds of stuff that way that I can't, you know. And when I Google stuff, I don't find what I'm looking for so much when I Google. I do sometimes, but
right.
not a lot.
You have to phrase it very, very carefully. But the thing is they're missing, even though some of the books may be old, they had greater detail. It's like the difference between looking at an entire magazine on that entire topic or finding a brief article on that topic and then keep looking for more brief articles.
Yeah, it's a fair point, in some fairness to Google or the net in general, you know, there are good resources there, and over time there will be more and more resources there, and we are going to have to learn how to navigate them. Unfortunately, schools are not teaching those skills, but your fundamental point is a good one, that, you know, just because it's on Google or because it's not on Google doesn't mean, or on the net, doesn't mean that it's not of value. And those old books are of great value, not only in and of themselves, but there's a way that books or even magazine articles are put together that where you can kind of, the information has been edited and refined. There's a reason that the New York Times or the New Yorker or the Atlantic are at the top of the heap and that other journals are not. And we know that, and when you read those, you can see why. When you read a very finely edited book that's deeply sourced and you read the source notes, you can see how this writer assembled their information and navigated all of the pitfalls in that subject. On the web, you do not see that.
And you don't always know what you're getting. Debbie, thank you for bringing up. It's a good question. We will take more of your calls as we continue. Let me give you the number. If you're an educator, if you're a parent, if you are if you're a teacher, if you're simply interested in education, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom and How Learning Can Be Saved by Todd Oppenheimer, who's with us in the studio. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Denver's only independent news and talk radio station, AM 1150 KNRC.
The Penis, the international hit comedy that everyone is talking about.
It was hysterical. I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time.
Inspiring.
Funny. Very good. Nothing I haven't seen before, but very good. It was hysterical. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Entertaining. It was great to bring my husband, one of the few men here, tonight. It was great.
I look painful.
These two naked Aussies achieve a lunatic virtuosity, sending audiences into hysterics in New York and London. Now Denver audiences are roaring with laughter. The Penis extends at the new Denver Civic Theater, 721 Santa Fe Drive. A once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's hard to resist the good-natured silliness, raves variety. Don't miss this hilarious phenomenon. The Philadelphia Inquirer raves it's good, clean fun.
Entertaining, embarrassing, funny, silly. I laughed really hard. I would say come see.
Suppose you can imagine a guy sitting next to you just crossing his legs going, no, no, no.
Puppetry of the Penis. Reserve seats on sale now at Tickets West Outlets, TicketsWest.com, and the Denver Civic Theater box office. It's like nothing you've ever seen.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Hi, I'd like a corn dog, please.
Okay, that'll be $1.75.
Hey, lady, I'll give you one for $1.48.
Okay.
Wait, how about $1.12?
Sure.
How about 99 cents, and I'll bring it over to you for free.
Getting a low price always feels good. That's comparison shopping the new fashion way at Yahoo. Search, compare, and save at shopping.yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
Tough as her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Kick off the holidays by attending the Art Reach Festival of Trees, November 15th through 30th at the Wildlife Experience. Presented by RE/MAX International, 2003 marks the 25th year of this landmark Denver holiday event, featuring gorgeous trees, wreaths, and decorations. Admission is only $6 for adults, $5 for seniors, and $3 for kids. And all proceeds benefit Art Reach, a Colorado nonprofit changing lives through the arts. For information on the 2003 Festival of Trees, go to artreachdenver.org.
Barasha.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
226 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. My guest in studio, Todd Oppenheimer, winner of the National Magazine Award. He's written for all the top publications. His book, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and How Learning Can Be Saved. And it's really valuable to look at this book because his research is wonderful. His ideas are good. This has been a pet peeve of mine that somehow computers could replace the genuine creativity that resides in all of us. It seems to me that when we're watching the same TV programs, in my area, broadcast has been so consolidated. Book publishing has become so consolidated. It's computers in the classroom that, at a time when we don't celebrate creativity as much as we celebrate mediocrity, it seems to me that we're drinking out of the same stale trough of really tired, stale ideas.
Yeah, and one of the things that disturbs me is that here we are, we have a culture that's already completely overstuffed with distractions and electronic stimulation at every turn. And we know that. Everybody knows that. There's much too much television. There's much too much, you know, video games, this and that. There's, you know, stimulus in every corner in a coffee shop. And what do the educators come up with? Let's get more of this and let's now put it in the classroom. Oh. Instead of keeping the classroom a sanctuary for, you know, real discussion and real work.
Well, I want to talk to you more about that. We have calls 303-382-1150 if you want to talk to Todd Oppenheimer, if you want to register on this discussion, if you're a teacher, if you're a student, if you're a parent, we want to hear from you. Bobby, calling from Littleton. Hi, you're live with Enid and Todd Oppenheimer on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hey, Enid. I just want to say, first of all, thanks for your show. You do a great job. I listen to you as much as I can.
Thank you.
I wanted to call to just kind of agree with what you guys were talking about. I think the thing you guys opened up with, you were talking about designers, and he told a story about how he was watching a designer work in some 3D application, and then he was able to just toss stuff, you know, willy-nilly as he wanted to and recreate it really fast. I'm a designer, and I've worked in the industry for probably 10 or 11 years, and I can say honestly that the people that I've worked with who weren't formally trained on computers when they started their design career are way more competent than those who started using computers to learn how to be a designer.
So they lean on the computer programs if they learn computers first.
Exactly.
And they don't develop their creativity.
It's like trying to teach a baby to walk with crutches. You know, it's really hard to get them to stop thinking in terms of what an application will do. I was really lucky, you know, because I still am. I still work with people who, when you're at an idea stage with an idea, whether it's a poster or an animation or whatever, you still start out with sketches. And you can't just sit down at a computer. You have to, you know, be a little bit more fundamental about it.
You know, it's so good to hear you say that, because I've talked to many different employers. I mean, you'd think that employers are going to say, well, I'm sorry, you know, the future is what it is, and you're just going to have to get with it, and the past is the past. That is not what I heard. I heard so many employers echoing the sentiments like yours, even in your field, yet from Lucasfilms, you know, the big interactive special effects film.
Which is right down the pike in Marin County.
That's right. The
Skywalker Ranch.
Right. The lead, hiring lady there told me, look, we do not look for people who are computer trained. We look for people who were never without their sketchbooks as a kid. Those who are computer trained, there's a stiffness to their drawing. They don't get the life of the stuff that they're drawing. Just what you said. And this is Lucasfilms.
Yeah, I think it's even true that, you know, if you were a classically trained designer and you start to lean on it too much, if it's the only thing you get a chance to use. I mean, if you don't paint, you don't sketch anymore. I mean, it really can hurt you really bad. Not to mention your eyes, you know.
Right.
If you work in like a fluorescent office where the refresh rate of the fluorescent lights is different than the monitor, and all kinds of headaches happen.
One employer I talked to, who's an oil geologist, and one of the problems he noticed, he said, you know, the machine is so powerful that when somebody thinks of some way to solve a problem or figure out something and the computer won't let them do it, their reaction is, well, I guess, you know, I don't need to do that, or it's not very important. So, you know, here's this supposed to be
so
the
instead
spring,
of overriding the computer,
yeah,
you
the
let
computer,
the computer override
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So here's supposed to be the springing machine, and it actually constrains us.
Enslaving. Bobby, thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
One of the things that I discovered, and I wanted your feedback on this, I lived on a houseboat in Sausalito, And at that time, it was on the Sausalito-Mill Valley line, and at that time they were going to try and put up a cell antenna at the end of the dock. And there was a little school there. And we were worried about the low-level electromagnetic, the low-level radiation. And so we made, this is my first foray into civic, making civic adjustments. And we actually got more than we ever expected. We were fairly successful. We got Marin County to institute guidelines and so on. You couldn't cite these things in near schools or convalescent homes or that sort of thing. But what we found out in the process that I think is little known is that your monitor, your computer monitor, is emitting a kind of low-level radiation, isn't it, a low-level electromagnetic energy? And for kids, you should be at least an arm's length away, and kids are these developing little bodies. So here are kids that are just hunched right up close.
Yeah.
Can you comment on this? Have I got it somewhat right, or am I being too much of an alarmist?
Yeah. you have it somewhat right. To be fair, this is not something I studied in great detail because the science is a little equivocal on it. I know that the general recommendation is you should be a decent distance from the screen, and you're right.
Kids, for adults, you know, as well, but adults, kids, yeah, are even more valuable.
All the more so.
And all these kids have cell phones, mobile phones, hooked to their ears,
yeah,
and that's putting out a low-level,
yeah,
radiation.
No, there's
so between computer monitors,
right,
and cell phones, these kids are radioactive. They're glowing in the dark.
Yeah, well...
Well,
yeah, I mean, it might be a little overstated, but there's a concern there. There's definitely a concern there, and it's one that we're ignoring, and more is going to have to be looked at. I mean, I know that some of these cell towers, I have a friend who's looked into it very, very deeply and fought some of the same battles you have, and they have found some amazing things. So it's not something to be dismissed.
No, but we don't have any research about kids with another issue about kids sitting in front of computers, nothing that you're aware of?
There are some. There's an organization called the Alliance for Childhood that has done some studies in this direction. They are alarmist, but their research was pretty good. It's a little biased to one direction, but that organization is looking into it, and it bears more study.
Well, one of the issues that occurs with computer use when kids are older is that they steal papers off the internet, and they don't actually write their own papers; they cut and paste. And a lot of academics have created programs to catch these cheaters. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the endless rat race of technology. You know, every time there's a new idea, there's people who figure out how to abuse it, and then we think, okay, well, now we're going to create a system that will control that. And, you know, you never catch up. You never catch up. The hack, there's any system that gets built, there's a way to hack through it. You can find it in some of the security surveillance that's occurring in the country. You find it with the filtering software, which is, you know, just as important as this plagiarism, where, you know, there's every school now is supposed to have some kind of blocking system where it can keep students from going to illicit sites, dangerous sites.
Well, if these students manifested half the creativity it took to elude these systems and put it in the paper, they'd be a lot better off,
exactly,
I think.
Exactly. So we're channeling the creativity that should be used on, you know, building a circuit board and instead teaching them how to hack a system. I mean, in the end, they're learning something, but it's a shame that, you know, you could be a little more efficient.
I'm getting an email from Susan. Susan says, "This author is pretty insulting. I am good at graphic arts, and if this jerk wants to start out with a fresh blank screen and see if he can create something as good as I can, well, come on, buddy, give me his name and number. I do not use keystrokes or whatever the hell he is talking about to create my stuff. Contrary to his, an unprintable word, view, not everyone is graphically inclined and can create art. What an insulting ass. I start out sketching things out and then put it in Core One Draw and make it look better. What a jerk." Signed, Susan C.
Well,
and how would you respond to that, Todd Oppenheimer, author of The Flickering Mind, The False,
right,
Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and How Learning Can Be Saved?
Well, if someone who's not a graphic artist wants to draw something with an automated program, that's fine. Just don't call themselves a graphic artist. When a graphic artist thinks that they've taught themselves the skills in this discipline through automated functions, I pity them when it's time for them to find a job.
My guest is Todd Oppenheimer, winner of the National Magazine Award, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and How Learning Can Be Saved. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on AM 1150, noon to 3, KNRC. 2:36, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 57 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Owen Sausage. High winds gusting up to 80 miles an hour caused power problems in Lyons today. Some power lines were knocked down by the wind, and that knocked out electricity for about an hour. The wind is also kicking up a lot of ash from the Overland Fire burn area. Boulder County Sheriff's Lieutenant Phil West says it may look like smoke, but it's just blowing ash. Even though we're near the 60s today in Denver, winter is hitting the high country. CDOT crews are dropping sand and ice slicer while semi-drivers are being asked to chain up on I-70 at the Eisenhower Tunnel and on Vail Pass and Loveland Pass. Treacherous conditions, too, in the southwest corner of the state. More than two dozen home burglaries have happened in the northeast section of Westminster during the last 2 months, and the burglar struck again last night. Police say the burglar enters houses that are dark and steals things, whether alarms are going or not. Police are urging people to leave lights on to avoid the burglaries. Several vehicles were damaged, but no casualties have been reported. In a series of explosions Tuesday evening inside the grounds of the U.S.-led administration headquarters in Baghdad, an Army spokeswoman says three rockets landed inside the fortified zone. Saudi Arabia has detained suspects in the deadly suicide bomb attack on a housing complex in Riyadh on Sunday. Sources say a group of suspects in the bombing were ordered held, but that some were released after being questioned. Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terrorist network is said to be claiming responsibility for the attack, according to a report in a London-based Arab-language newspaper. Real estate heir Robert Durst has admitted killing his neighbor, slicing up the body, and throwing the remains in Galveston Bay, but today a Texas jury found him not guilty of murder. The 60-year-old Durst said he shot his friend Morris Black accidentally in a squabble over a gun and then chopped up the body to cover up the crime. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are on the ice in San Jose tonight against the Sharks. The Avs go into tonight's matchup with a four-game unbeaten streak. Make the holidays even more special by treating your family to Owen's Sausage. Now your local Albertsons has Owen's Roll Sausage and new Owen's Express Links, two for $5. Owen's, from our family to yours. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:38.
My name is Troy, and I met my fiancé on eHarmony.com.
My name is Tom, and I met my fiancé, Brenda, on eHarmony.com.
My name is Jack, and I met my wife, Jennifer, on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the thousands of eHarmony matches. Dating services give you a picture and a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
Hi, my name's Daniel, and I found my fiance Allison at eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy couples out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
KNRC News Time is 2:39. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Diamond Shamrock Corner Stores. Cleaning up an accident westbound I-70 at I-25. Everything else has just been quiet due to this Veterans Day. You will see traffic lights out Wadsworth and Stamford Street. Those is a four-way stop. Drive into your neighborhood Diamond Shamrock Corner Store for a Sobe. Non-carbonated exotic teas and juice blends. Sobe cans are two for $2 at Diamond Shamrock. Drive in, zip out. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Some big temperature changes coming up by midweek, but this afternoon looks fine. We'll see a high near 57 with a mix of sunshine and a few clouds. Just a few clouds around tonight, 28, but partly cloudy and cooler Wednesday. We'll see a high of 46, and by Thursday, plenty of clouds and scattered snow showers and a high only near 40. For the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 57 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:40. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
If you haven't heard the big news about dieting, listen closely. The experts are now saying that low-carb diet plans do work. But if the thought of eating nothing but meat sounds scary to you, continue to listen closely, because the next 30 seconds could change your life. Introducing UltraCarb. UltraCarb is the original carb-blocking, fat-burning supplement guaranteed to help you lose up to 20 pounds in the next month without exhausting workouts or life-changing diets. With UltraCarb, you can continue to eat the foods you love, pasta, pizza, and bread, and still lose weight. After blocking the carbs, UltraCarb works with your body's natural fat-burning mechanism to rid your body of unwanted pounds. Imagine looking in the mirror a month from now and seeing the thinner, happier you. And because UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work, you have nothing to lose except unwanted pounds. Call now to find out how you can receive a one-month supply free with your order.
Call now, 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. Lose unwanted pounds 100% safe and guaranteed. 1-800-451-6432.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major averages closed modestly lower on this Veterans Day. The Dow Industrials fell 19 points to 97.38. The NASDAQ lost 11 points to 1931. The S&P 500 shed half a point to 1,047. Big board volume was fairly light, nearly 1.2 billion shares trading hands. Decliners beat advancers by roughly 3-2 margin. ExxonMobil was one of the Dow's better performers, rising 29 cents a share. This after positive comments from Bank of America and Goldman Sachs. Microsoft, the day's busiest stock on this, its annual shareholders meeting, and its stock was down 20 cents. Microsoft also kicks off 3 days of hearings tomorrow in Europe. The company will be trying to avoid harsher penalties from European regulators for alleged monopoly behavior concerning Windows. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone, 303-382-1150. KNRC.
243 on the Tuesday edition of Enid Live. Well, we were saying goodbye to Todd Oppenheimer, but we started talking, and I thought he had to leave, and he doesn't. And we began to talk about a fascinating part of his research. He has written a book called The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and how learning could be saved. And we're not hearing enough of the other side, the side that looks at computers with a raised eyebrow. And I think this book is extremely valuable, and it is the outgrowth of a piece that he did in the Atlantic Monthly, and for which he won the 1998 National Magazine Award. So I urge you to look at his book, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom, and How Learning Can Be Saved. There is a kind of corruption that happens with that you have stumbled upon in at least two ways. Tell us about the corruption that we wouldn't necessarily associate with computers and computer learning.
Yeah, worries about this whole trend is that the arrival of technology, computer technology in the schools is so huge and so dependent on the computer industry and its complications that schools and teachers and administrators really can't keep up with or match wits with the technologists who make this stuff. And so it's causing problems in two ways. The first, the most gross way, is the companies that are being hired to wire the schools, and particularly the poor schools, are coming in and fudging their prices in such a way that they're inflating costs for the schools. I found instances in San Francisco where they were inflating costs on basic internet switches as much as 300 and 400%. This is NEC Corporation. This is not some small outfit. IBM is in trouble now for rigging the bids in districts all over the country and creating a non-competitive bid where they were arranged to get the contracts, and they were bidding this past year for getting $1 billion from the government. That's us, from us, taxpayers, to wire schools. That's half the money that we were going to be spending for wiring schools in the special program called the E-rate program in the past year.
Should have been called the I-rate program.
Exactly. good point. The matter has become very serious, and federal investigators are on it now, and there may be hearings early next year on Capitol Hill. So that's one area. That's just a sort of a gross situation. There are many other instances in the books of smaller corruption where school administrators are taking the schools for a ride, selling computers to themselves, whatever, all kinds of things. Now, on a deeper level and a more common level, because those that is not happening in every school, but it's happening. I think there are probably somewhere between 30, 40, 50 companies implicated in that first round of trouble, different places around the country. One in New York State is in federal getting, they got federal indictment for numbers of charges of faking invoices and lying, and coaching school officials to lie and all kinds of things. Anyway, the second level that I want to get to is more in terms of what happens in the classroom. When this software is brought into the classroom, it's often sold based on research to prove that it increases academic achievement. And this is becoming more and more common because one of the main requirements in President Bush's new education law, the No Child Left Behind Act,
which he's left behind in terms of funding.
Yeah, right, exactly. This is very true. Is that any new big initiative that's brought into schools is based on what they call scientifically based research. It has to have scientific proof that this, whatever this thing is, works, boosts achievement. So all these companies are just, you know, they just love to hear those terms. They're turning around and reworking their materials and showing that there's scientific proof that their stuff works. Well, you know, most of the time that proof is not terribly scientific, and there is very little evidence that it works. And one of the grossest examples is a company that's been doing this research way before President Bush came along has been doing much more research than many other companies, and still still their research is half-baked and cooked, and is really taking the schools for a ride.
Which company?
This is a company called Renaissance Learning out of Madison, Wisconsin. They make several programs, and the most popular is one called Accelerated Reader, and it's in over half the schools in the country. It's all over. And it is a very simplistic program.
Accelerated Reader. Supposed to teach you how to read? Is that the story?
It doesn't really teach you how to read. What it does is it motivates, supposedly. It motivates students to read.
Oh, how about your parents reading to you? That would be good.
That would be nice.
Very low-tech.
Exactly.
All right, so this is in half the schools. It's the evidence that it's based on is cooked and concocted, it sounds like. And distorted.
Right. And it, in fairness, you know, there's a tiny, tiny shred that it does somewhat boost some reading abilities, but, you know, certainly no more than, in fact, less than any other very traditional ways to teach reading that, you know, are well known by now. Nobody has to go buy a fancy program to teach reading.
So on the basis of their FACO evidence, they get themselves in this school because they need scientific bases for how good this is as a learning tool.
That's right.
And so they're in more than half the schools in this country, you're saying,
right,
and have made probably what? Astronomical profits.
Oh, they're very wealthy. There is a very successful company. It is the leading reading software program in the nation, dominant by far.
Is there other reading software that is much more effective but far less used or far less successful? Or is maybe reading software only limited by in what it can actually accomplish by its very nature?
Yeah, reading software is one of those areas that really, you know, it's kind of it's just an unnecessary domain. There's very little that's of use. The only time where it's of use is where you have special education kids or other kids who have real problems and they need just relentless practice, much, much more practice than the average adult has patience for. So you put them in front of a computer and you have them read a bunch of passages over and over, and there's sounds and there's all kinds of, you know, different stimuli to sort of teach them how sounds work. But those are kids with special problems. The average student doesn't need reading software.
But this company has managed to sell a bill of goods to the educational...
Yes, and their products...
Industry, essentially, and has made a fortune in doing it.
Right, and their products are not cheap. I mean, they've got a whole extensive set and all kinds of things they'll sell you. They have a whole school-wide program of how to do fancy diagnostics, and the diagnostics are baloney. They're canned. They'll feed out a report that says Sarah has the ability to do, you know, expert text analysis and, you know, can use conflicting sources, and there's zero evidence that Sarah
can do. You know what this is? This is the CYA mentality, cover your behind mentality, so that the principal can say, well, we have this scientific-based technology here, that, and look at their test results, and look at their cooked information, and that's why we went with that, and so if our students are doing so well, you know, guess what? It's not my fault. We're doing all the high-tech stuff that everybody says you're supposed to do. That is what it gives those people cover.
Well, it gives them cover, but it also, in fairness to the school administrators, you know, the school culture as a whole is a very trusting culture. And so when somebody comes in and says, look, I have research that with statistical significance that shows this thing improves, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, most administrators don't understand what statistical significance really is. And, you know, it's actually, you know, it's a curious term that's not what it appears to be. And
so, but it sounds better than statistical insignificance.
Right.
Talk to me, Todd, about the digital divide, poor schools, rich schools.
Well, this is another one of the great hoaxes that I at least am arguing is made today. And the digital divide, as most people know, is the campaign popularized by the Clinton administration that poor people, poor schools in particular, and generally poor people are having much less access to technology than wealthy students do. And so we've got to get them more technology or they'll fall behind and they won't get sort of the high-tech opportunities of tomorrow, particularly in the job field. Well, nothing could be further from the truth on two counts. The first count is this. If you go and look at poor schools, the technology is so poorly used that, and the reason it's poorly used is that in order to use technology properly, you need a tremendous amount of money and time and resources and skill. All of those things poor schools are famous for not having. Technology is a drain on schools. In poor schools, it is an extreme drain because there's nothing there to start with or very little. So what you see in the poor schools is such bad use, and everybody and the teachers who are so haggard and beaten down that when the students are suddenly behaving and paying attention on their computers, they think, oh, thank God, we finally made progress. And all of this is just it's just a high-priced babysitter. So what it's doing is it's actually increasing the real divide between the rich and the poor, and that's the intellectual divide. It's actually dumbing down the academic experience for poor schools and fooling the poor with technology. So that
take me through how it's dumbing down poor students. If they're sitting in front of a computer and they're Googling some research or writing a paper, or how do you see it as dumbing down?
Well, it's dumbing it down in the ways we've talked about so far about, you know, bad research masquerading as real research, that experience I explained in Harlem where the kid was doing the fancy geometric program, the automated program. He thought he was doing real work. He wasn't. This is in Harlem. The teacher thinks he's doing the real work, and other students who are doing it, he can't even get time to go see him because half the computers are crashing, and he's got to fix those, and other kids are cutting up, and he's got to get them under control. So he can't supervise the scene to make sure that that student would actually understand the principles of the software. The Internet is very poorly used in those schools. It doesn't work in most cases. They spend half their class period just trying to make it work so that they only have maybe 10 or 15 minutes to do any real research, which leaves no time for discussion, let alone writing. So it's just one insult after another. And so if they just use simple materials like just some handouts, some paper handouts, and said, look, you read these two articles that are in these handouts and think about the way they contradict and what you make of those contradictions, a student would get more out of that class hour than with all the computers.
Compare and contrast.
Yeah. So that's number one. The second count of where the digital divide is fooling us is the whole basis of the argument is that we've got to get high-tech skills for the jobs of tomorrow. Everybody presumes that the future is increasingly technological, which it is, and that kids have got to get these skills if they're going to make it. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The employers I talk to, and I talk to many in a range of fields, say, you know, come on, that's not what I need. I can teach the skills, the computer skills these kids need, or if I can't teach them, he or she can learn them in some, you know, adult education course or something else for, you know, in a semester or in college or something. They don't need to spend their early school hours on that. What they do need to do is learn the fundamentals of reasoning and writing and communication and reliability and how to create and imagine, and that's what they want to see.
Amen. Thank you so much for joining us. Todd Oppenheimer, the book, The Flickering Mind, The False Promise of Technology in the Classroom and How Learning Can Be Saved. It's a fabulous book. I'm Enid Goldstein, and this is AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
This week on Colorado State of Mind, the Emmy-winning series discusses a soldier's difficult choice between family and duty. A Fort Carson soldier and her husband were deployed for military duty early this year. They called in a grandparent to look after their seven children. While the couple served overseas, the man's ex-wife filed for custody of her two biological children. An emergency trip home resulted in a court order that at least one parent should remain in the U.S. to retain custody. The woman stayed, her husband returned to Iraq. The woman now faces military dismissal and possible jail time for being AWOL. What would you do in her situation? Find out what other Coloradoans think Friday night at 8:30 on Rocky Mountain PBS Channel 6. Also, the U.S. Senate recently approved spending $87.5 billion for rebuilding Iraq. Six senators were present for the vote. Should such important legislation be passed by so few? Join the discussion online anytime at rmpbs.org and join host Greg Dobbs every Friday night at 8:30 for Colorado State of Mind.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Millions of Americans have joined the Atkins low-carb revolution. Now, the number one name in weight loss offers you more tools and techniques for getting slim and healthy and staying that way with the Essential Atkins for Life Kit. It's a portable gift-sized box packed with hundreds of recipes, a carb counter, a dining out guide, plus a motivational CD that'll keep you on track. Maintain the Atkins lifestyle with the Essential Atkins for Life Kit. Available wherever books are sold from St. Martin's Griffin.
Times are tight, and if you're retired, the cost of living adjustment doesn't seem to keep up. That's why AARP is sponsoring a program with the National Council on Aging to ensure that you aren't missing out on valuable benefits. If you're an older American living on a fixed income and you're having trouble paying your bills, here's good news. You may be eligible for savings on groceries, healthcare, and even energy bills. Call AARP and the National Council on Aging for your free and confidential benefit checkup. Call 303-318-6764 for more information.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
The Alternative Gift Market will offer unique gifts from around the world on Sunday, November 24th from 8:30 to 2 p.m. at the First Universalist Church at 4101 East Hampton Avenue. All vendors will represent not-for-profit organizations, and gifts will include weavings from Guatemala, jewelry from Ethiopia, embroidery from India, and much more. That's the Alternative Gift Market, November 24th at 4101 East Hampton. This holiday season, give the gift of a better world.
Talk to Greg Dobbs.
The Bush administration is seeking to block a group of American troops who were tortured in Iraqi prisons during the Persian Gulf War in 91 from collecting any of the hundreds of millions of dollars in frozen Iraqi assets that they won last summer in federal court. Do you believe it? That says it all right there. Bush, isn't he the guy who says he's for the American soldier? It's all lip service.
Greg Dobbs, weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Well, it's time to say goodbye. Thank you to Joe Anderson for producing the show today. He did a fine job. Thank you, Jordan Lyles, for your keeping us on the air, technical producer, engineer, etc. I'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Ty Pennington will be joining us live from the Learning Channel. Betsy Lendorf will be in from the Rocky Mountain News. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6, Dominic and Billy 6 to 9. I'll see you tomorrow at noon right here. I'm Enid Goldstein, and this is
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 57 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by One Tree Hill on WB2. The battle to keep Colorado kids from using tobacco products is far from over. This from Attorney General Ken Salazar after major tobacco companies yesterday agreed to pull advertising from the special editions of certain magazines that are sent to schools. It's a move that is part of the National Master Settlement Agreement that prohibits big tobacco from targeting youth in its ad campaigns. However, on this matter, Salazar says in Colorado there is still work to be done.
Some states have done better than others. You know, we in Colorado have not done, frankly, as well as other states like Florida and Mississippi and California, where smoking among young people has been reduced by 20% to 40%.
Salazar says Colorado can achieve similar numbers in its reduction of youthful smokers by addressing the situation with a time-honored solution, more money. There was another home burglary in Westminster last night. The northeast section of Westminster has been plagued by more than two dozen burglaries since August. There are seven subdivisions in the area, from 104th to 144th and Sheridan to Huron. Last night, police were searching the Ranch Reserve subdivision on a report that a man was seen running out of the neighborhood after a robbery. Police say the burglar will steal items from houses no matter whether alarms are going or not. They say the thefts happen in houses that are dark, appearing as though no one is home, so police say leave those lights on. Today is Veterans Day, and each year the students at Stanley Lake High School gather on the Westminster campus to honor those who served our country. Retired U.S. Navy Captain John McGrath was one of the guest speakers, and these are his comments on the highlight of his message to the students.
This thing to apply to these kids, where they're going in life. They're going to get to serve their country, and they better have a good moral foundation to go to do that, to face the rest of their life.
McGrath served in Vietnam and was a prisoner of war for nearly 6 years. James Brown of Broomfield, who served as a U.S. Army Sergeant 5th Class in Germany and Thailand from 1964 to 1972, says most of today's kids don't appreciate what vets have done because they're not being taught enough U.S. history.
One of the reasons is it's not being taught. I know the history and the geography, I don't think it's being taught the way it was when I went to school.
One student called today a celebration of the liberty and freedom of being an American. A somber President Bush presided over Veterans Day ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. After laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns, the president spoke at the amphitheater behind the tomb, telling those gathered that every veteran understands loyalty and sacrifice. He acknowledged U.S. veterans of all wars. President Bush says the U.S. maintains the greatest fighting force in the world. In a Veterans Day speech to the conservative Heritage Foundation, Bush cited U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, calling them warriors and liberators. Veteran actor Art Carney has died. The 85-year-old Carney is best known for his role of the character Ed Norton in the 50s comedy series The Honeymooners. Carney starred alongside Jackie Gleason in that show. Carney's character in the show was a sewer worker, and Gleason's character Ralph Cramden played the role of a New York City bus driver. Carney, as well as Gleason, went on to star in a number of movies before retiring. Jury selection is picking up in the murder trial of alleged D.C. sniper accomplice Lee Boyd Malvo in Chesapeake Bay. Reporter Kathy Culpepper says a majority of the jurors have been picked.
So far, 23 people have been picked for a pool of 28 that the judge wants to use to pick the 16 jurors who will actually hear the case of Lee Boyd Malvo.
Many jurors have cited religion as the reason they would be unable to impose the death penalty if the 18-year-old is found guilty in the shooting death of FBI analyst Linda Franklin last October. In Virginia Beach yesterday, prosecutors rested their case in the murder trial of alleged sniper John Allen Muhammad. The defense will present its case when trial resumes tomorrow. The Guinness Book of World Records is celebrating its own entry in the record books. The book just released its 100 millionth copy, making it the best-selling copyright book of all time. Record holders mentioned in the book mingled at a reception in London. The world's tallest man was there, as was the woman with the most body piercings. Another perhaps unwelcome guest was the man who produced the loudest burp. That record has been safe since Paul Hunn belched on television in 2000. Stocks finished lower today. The Dow Jones Industrials average dropped 19 points to close at 97.38. The tech-heavy NASDAQ lost 11 points to wind up at 19.31. And the broader S&P 500 index slipped more than half a point to end the session at 10.47. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are in San Jose tonight to take on the Sharks. The Avs are hoping they can push their unbeaten streak to 5 games tonight. Denver Broncos quarterback Jake Plummer says his foot is feeling great, and he's planning to play against the San Diego Chargers this Sunday. But fullback Mike Anderson won't be on the field. He's been suspended for a month by the NFL because a random drug test found marijuana in Anderson's system. Tonight, a pill secretly slipped into a drink puts one girl in a dangerous position. TV's most daring new drama, One Tree Hill, tonight at 8, after Gilmore Girls on Colorado's WB2. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 3:05.
Do you know the difference between customizing an opening to fit a door and customizing a door to fit an opening? Call Colorado Door Connection at 303-425-3366. They'll explain. From structural integrity to financial sense, this is a question you cannot afford to overlook when considering the doors in your home. Since a door is the first impression made to your home or room, and you know the saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression, Colorado Door Connection will help you make the best impression possible through excellent service and quality products. Call now and receive a free handle set valued at $160 with a purchase of $600 or more. Colorado Door Connection. Visit our showroom at 9710 West 50th Avenue, just off I-70 and Kipling, or call 303-425-3366. Don't put your home's doors on the back burner any longer. The holidays and holiday guests are fast approaching, so visit Colorado Door Connection today.
KNRC News Time is 3:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Starch Buster for low-carb dieters from Metabolife. Westbound I-70 at Colorado. Watch for an injury accident. 17th and Lawrence downtown, you'll see a bit of a problem, as well as an accident on Arapahoe at Clinton, just east of I-25. Good news for low-carb dieters. Eat bread, pasta, and potatoes without absorbing all the carb calories. It's Metabolife Starch Buster. Look for Metabolife Starch Buster wherever you shop. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Some big temperature changes coming up by midweek, but this afternoon looks fine. We'll see a high near 57 with a mix of sunshine and a few clouds. Just a few clouds around tonight, 28, but partly cloudy and cooler Wednesday. We'll see a high of 46, and by Thursday, plenty of clouds and scattered snow showers and a high only near 40. For the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Ken Weathers on AM 1150, KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 57 degrees. KNRC News Time is 3:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
And now, the Doug Kellett Show on AM 1150, KNRC.
And welcome in, 3:07 on AM 1150 KNRC. We are glad you are there, and we'll get started here on the program for this afternoon. Meanwhile, Andrew Elfenbein doing the producing duties, Jordan Lyles handling everything else, and we're taking your calls at 303-382-1150 if you want to join in on the program here. Let me give you an idea of what we're going to be talking about. First, I want to kind of recap some of our discussion from yesterday when we had my man, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, on the program here. In fact, it even sparked so much interest that I understand that Greg Dobbs is going to have Reverend Peterson on his program perhaps tomorrow morning, so you might want to be listening in on this. So I'm going to talk a few things left over, I think, from our conversation yesterday about this, so I hope you'll hang around on this. Bring up today on some other stories as well, and then at 4 o'clock we're going to be joined by Casper Weinberger, who was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Defense. There are a number of things I want to talk to him about. First, the Senate Intelligence Memo, the Demo Memo, as a lot of people are calling it, from Senator Rockefeller's office. I want to talk to him about the current situation in Iraq and see what he has to say about it. And also, too, really about the CBS decision to nix the Reagan movie and move it over to Showtime. Here's a guy that knew Ronald Reagan up close, and we'll talk to him about some of those issues. You may have some of your own, of course, in the next hour, and that'll be with Casper Weinberger, again, former Secretary of Defense. And then after he leaves us around 4:35, we'll have some open line the rest of the program here. So we got a lot of time for you to get into the show. And I know a number of you, yesterday, we left on the lines at the end of the program, didn't get really to have your say. And so if you would like to talk about it, you're certainly welcome to do so. If you weren't listening, we had a rather rip-roaring conversation, I think, with Reverend Peterson. Here's a guy. For example, for those of you that weren't here, here's a guy who is a black conservative, and he had some rather strong things to say about his own race. He had strong things to say about the so-called, as I call them, the self-proclaimed black leadership in this country, And he's also written a book called Scam, and it's mainly aimed at people like Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, Al Sharpton, and the like. And we kind of went into this. One of the points, though, that I wanted to make from yesterday's program that I don't want to be lost in all of this was my assertion that if you're black in this country and you are conservative, you're going to be attacked. And you're going to be attacked by people that normally you wouldn't think that you would be attacked by, right? And that would be such as the Congressional Black Caucus. You're going to be ridiculed by the NAACP. You're going to have people on the left, for example, that have you, for some reason, maybe we know the reason, but for some reason, a lot of our friends on the left, and I may be talking to you, view a black conservative to be the most dangerous person that you could possibly have out there. And why is that? Because if the Democratic Party has a fracture in the black community and doesn't have a strong black voting bloc, especially in the South, they simply will not any further. As Dale Miller pointed out, they're not a national party any longer. They cannot win elections. That's why I think deep down it's really essential to the minds of a lot of people that you go after black conservatives. Keep them, for example, from getting on the Court of Appeals. What's worse? Now think about this. What is worse, perhaps, in the minds of a liberal than to have a black judge who is against affirmative action? Because why? Because after all, that takes away the idea, does it not, that you must have the government to help you along, that you must have the government somehow to make the way for you. If you have people who are moving up the ladder on their own and they are then role models, this is the problem I think that it causes a lot of people and why I believe folks like Judge Janice Brown, for example, from California, is under such great attack in her nomination for a judgeship. Because after all, you have people like Clarence Thomas, not for affirmative action. Why, for example, do so many of the Congressional Black Caucus and so many of the people who hate Clarence Thomas, I think that would be safe to say, there's a hatred out there for him. Why is it? Because he is a black judge who doesn't agree with affirmative action. More than any other issue. It's not just being conservative on a lot of things. It's about affirmative action in the minds of a lot of people. So that was my premise yesterday and why we had Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson on. Now, I know some of you thought it was rather stimulating. Some of you thought it was very entertaining. Some of you were upset of the fact that we had Reverend Peterson on. Let me, before we go to your calls, because I know we got some folks who want to talk about this, here's some of the items that Reverend Peterson mentioned yesterday. He said, for example, that white Americans are not guilty of the sins of the past, and they must be careful not to fall to the anger of these socialist, destructive black leaders who want to racially divide and conquer us. You know, a lot of criticism by some of my friends on the left are that conservatives are the people who divide America. Conservatives are the group that are out, you know, is out there that somehow wants to pit race, one race against another. What I find, generally, going to turn the tables on you here just a bit, what I find, it's the other way around, that the people who talk the most about race are the ones that say they are concerned about discrimination or whatever. And so, because of that, I believe when you talk about the movement, which I think is out there, of black conservatives in this country, the J.C. Watts, I guess, view of things, like we saw from Oklahoma, for example, I think the Republican Party, while I think it's been said by many in the party itself that, yes, it needs to do more to reach out and explain to people of color why the Republican Party is the party, for the most part, that's better for them, I think one of the things missing on this is the fact that you've got an opportunity that the Republicans or the conservatives that control the Republican Party for the most part, they're the party that does believe in individualism and does believe in getting government out of the way of harming people, getting government out of the way of dependency and so on over a number of years. So I think that's why you find people like Reverend Peterson, for example, who are gravitating more to the Republican thought, because they see a problem in their own community. Now, Reverend Peterson made a couple of comments that really got people fired up. One is he said that most black Americans are immoral. And then he used as a, I know this one really got people fired up, and I think I see Don from Denver's on the line, and this is probably the point he wants to make. But the way he backed this up, whether you agree with the premise or not, I would not touch this one. I will be honest with you that I do not look at things from the standpoint that a group of people would be immoral if such and such occurs. But this is what he said. He said 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. Now, is that, for example, I thought about this last night. I don't know where he necessarily got that from. Is that correct, you wonder? And Andrew says he'll look it up and see what the statistics say. I know that we have a high illegitimacy rate in the black community. And I don't know, the percentage of 70% seems awful high to me. But that was one of the points he was making. He said that black men comprise nearly 50% of the prison population. So therefore, he was putting that into his discussion about the issue of morality. That's one of the things that got people fired up. One point we never got into with him on the show yesterday was his thoughts about the idea of reparations for the slavery movement. He calls this divisive and wicked to the core. He also made a comment. He said, black Americans must drop their anger and realize it is not the white American who is causing their destruction, but their own so-called leaders whose evil has no end. So, anyway, that gives you an idea. If you weren't here yesterday, what got things going yesterday? And meanwhile, we welcome your call at 303-382-1150. And as always, there's a lot of things really to talk about out there today, and I don't want the show to get by without... You know, I have to remind myself when we get toward the end of the program, I had all these things yesterday, for example, that I thought we should be discussing, but I'll try to make sure we get into that. Don't forget, Casper Weinberger will join us after 4 o'clock today. Let's go to Don in Denver. Don, you're on AM 1150 KNRC.
What's up, Dougie?
Hey, Don. How you doing, my friend?
I'm terrible today, man. I'm mad at KNRC, and I'm mad at you.
You are mad? I thought, from what Andrew told me yesterday, you were mad during the program, huh? Why could you be mad at me about for bringing this up?
Okay, because, you know something, if I came on your show and said the majority of Jewish people are bloodsuckers of the black community, then I gave examples of people having stores and them running the media, you would say, Don, that's ridiculous, and I'm not going to stand for that and probably hang up in my face. But
Don, I would challenge you on it. That's I think you're right about that, but you have said... Let me just put, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you have said that the white man, this country would be better off if the white man hasn't come here, and I consider that almost about as vile. Huh?
That's self-evident.
No, it's not self-evident. So don't call at me about how you're disappointed with KNRC or you're disappointed with me for bringing this up now.
But I would never say that most white people are nefarious people, although I know that some of them are, and I know a lot of them are good people because, you know, the old cliche, some of my best friends are white.
Well, of course, I was going to try to get away from the, of course, I have black friends, cliche or whatever. But let's talk about him, because after all, he did make some points. Let's take the morality thing that got you so fired up aside. He made some other points that were pretty good, I thought.
That's absolutely ludicrous to say the majority of black people are evil and immoral because you have a 70% birth rate that, you know, that's nowadays... that black kids are born out of wedlock. Number one, who says that you're immoral if you don't come from a traditional male and female family? Who says that?
Well, Don, now Don, if you're a reverend, then you're coming from the standpoint.
Come on,
that,
man.
Now, look, Don, hang on. You ask who's...
The reverend is not married.
Well, did you not...
He don't have any kids, and he's going to counsel other people on family life. Come on.
Don, did you not ask... Who decides this? Well, from Reverend Peterson's position, it's going to be God.
Okay,
so you can argue with God about that. Let's get to some other points, though. What about my premise that black conservatives are heavily criticized in this country for being conservative and against affirmative action and the like?
Well, I'll give you points for distracting me from the points that I wanted to make, but let me touch on that real quick.
Well, I don't know how much more we can go around and around about the all black folks or most are immoral issue. I don't think we can really get stuck on that one today.
I want to ask you a real yes or no question before I get off the phone with you, so please allow me that. But let me deal with the black conservatives.
Okay.
Doug, I'm a black conservative.
What?
I believe in conservative values. I believe in strong families. I believe in lower taxes. I'm against abortion. I'm for vouchers. So I guess that makes me a black conservative.
Now, wait a minute. What about taxes? What's your stand on you for lower taxes?
I believe in less government and lower taxes.
Well, you sound like a conservative to me. So what do I need to do to get you to vote Republican?
The problem that I have with black, so-called black conservatives, what I call neo-Negro conservatives, is that they're against affirmative action when most of them, Ken Hamblin, Clarence Thomas, and yes, the Reverend Jesse L. Peterson all benefited from affirmative action at one time or another. Brother, don't climb up the ladder, and then when you get to the top, kick the damn ladder down so I can't climb up too. And that's what's wrong with these Negro neoconservatives.
Well, Don, here's the thing about affirmative action, it seems to me. I've never gotten on the radio and argued whether we should have implemented this program or not. I would say that the best argument is left now to discuss whether we should continue this or not. And I think that's where a lot of these people, like Clarence Thomas, Judge Brown, for example, I don't think that they would be arguing that it never should have been in place. They're simply saying that now the opportunities are out there, you've got laws protecting this, and therefore we don't need to do it any longer.
Now that I'm on top and used every affirmative action situation that I can use to advance to the top, we don't really need that anymore. And see, these Negroes are hypocrites, and that's why we busted Jesse L. out on your show yesterday. And let me just say this to you, Doug, man. The reason why I was mad at you yesterday,
yeah,
man, is because you let this man ramble off some real overt racist statements, but I want to know what your stand is. I want to know, do you feel that the majority of black people in this country are immoral people?
Well,
yes or no?
Don, did I say no yesterday? I brought this up during the program. I distanced myself from that issue several times.
I want to know your opinion. I want to know yes or no whether you feel like most black people are immoral
or not. Don, did you not hear me? I just said no.
Okay.
Right. I mean, now, that doesn't mean, that does not mean, however, that we should not discuss the impact that's happening. For example, I think a lot of it is government programs on the black community,
I agree with the point that he made about welfare being a crippling effect on the black community. I agree with that. I agree that black people should pull themselves up by their bootstraps. I believe that black people should do for themselves and stop begging white people to do for them. So all of those points that he made, I agree with, but
That's the thing. I think you got hung up on the morality thing. My point was to try to explain.
Somebody called up and said that most white people were evil. You would let that ride?
No, but here's the thing. I don't identify to it, Don. Don, I don't think you should have identified yourself with what he was saying. In other words, people say, well, all white people are such and such. I'm an individual, so I know I may identify with that particular, generalization that someone has made or not. I don't think he is correct, to be honest with you, about the number of women who have illegitimate babies in the black community. I think 70% is awful high, and
it's a statistic that's out there right now. It's been out there for a few number of years. In the early 90s, the statistic was that 60% of black women that gave birth was illegitimate.
That concerns me. I'll tell you now, it could be a moral issue.
It concerns me too. And black leaders like Minister Faircon and Reverend Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson, they talk about it and castigate that type of behavior all the time, but it doesn't get any news coverage. I've been married for 15 years. I have four kids, okay? And I've been married for 15 years. I've been taking care of my family. And so when you let this man on your show to say most black people are immoral, I take exception.
Well, I don't blame you taking exception. You challenged him, and we've talked about it, but that wasn't the reason I brought him on the program, and I think you realize that. Don, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. If you want to join in, 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. I would have been, and Andrew's nodding his head in there, I would have been disappointed, first of all, if Don hadn't called yesterday, and if he hadn't called today, right? In fact, Andrew and I were talking about it in the room prior to the show today. I said, well, I'm going to bring this up again, and I'm going to talk about Don here for a minute, and I think that's what we've done. So if you want to join in, we welcome your call, 303-382-1150. I'm Doug Kellett. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. And right now, we need to check traffic for the first time on our program this afternoon and hopefully get you home safely on this Tuesday. Let's go to Darren Copeland. Darren, how's it look?
Well, because it's Veterans Day, it's been a pretty quiet drive all around, so that's some good news for you. We do have problems, though. Injury accident, westbound I-70 at Colorado. Watch for a backup there. Stall delays there as far as westbound I-70 at York. 17th and Lawrence downtown, watch for a problem, as well as Arapahoe and Clinton. That's an accident just east of I-25. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
Remember those nights in college when you'd talk passionately about the world until dawn? Welcome back, Class of 1150, in-depth talk radio, AM 1150, KNRC.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for, Shell.
It just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive, I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell Report at www.shell.com.
How would you like to spend your next vacation with Brad Paisley, Bill Anderson, Little Jimmy Dickens, and Ricky Skaggs? Come along with the Grand Ole Opry. The Opry Cruise is sailing to Grand Cayman, Cozumel, and other destinations in the Caribbean this January, and you can be aboard, courtesy of Banquet Homestyle Banks. Just visit www.countrystars.com for more information. That's www.countrystars.com. Brought to you by America's favorite meal, Banquet Homestyle Banks.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. It's common knowledge that household dust carries germs, mold spores, pesticides, things you don't want your family breathing in. With my 8-pound Orrick XL vacuum, there's never a cloud of dust in your face or foul odor because it's hypoallergenic. Call 1-800-989-4200 for free literature or a 30-day home trial. The Orrick is designed with your well-being in mind. 1-800-989-4200.
You know, the thing about winning awards is that you have to say award-winning this and award-winning that. And frankly, it's very tiring for a voice talent like myself.
Where's your Mai Tai, sir?
Thanks. But just in case you didn't know, you can download clips of award-winning news features and guest interviews from our award-winning website, made by an award-winning designer featuring award-winning hosts. Well, it's true. KNRCRadio.com has it all. But if somebody at the station wins a Nobel Prize, I'm out of here. This is the Doug Kellett Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Doug Kellett.
And welcome back. 3:27 our time on AM 1150 KNRC. Well, we got started here, and we're going to get right back to your calls. 303-382-1150 if you want to join in. Let's go to Mick in Denver. Mick, you're on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi.
Hey, hello, Mick. Doug. How you doing today?
Oh, okay. Not too bad.
Good.
Spending a quiet Veterans Day and sending my thoughts out to all veterans.
Absolutely. We don't want to go through the program without mentioning that. You're right.
Yeah. Tough job. One of the toughest in the world. I know. But I just wanted to more or less call you on your opening statement about why is it that black liberals are...
why do they attack black conservatives, right?
Yeah, simply put, yeah. Well, I believe it's the same reason that white conservatives go after white liberals. very much the same. It's a mirror image. And I don't think that anyone of right mind and that uses logic would be able to come up with a convincing argument that that is not the case.
Well, how about this? I think I'm fairly bright mind and so on. Mm-hmm. If, for example, my premise is that black conservatives are attacked more because the black voting bloc is so important, and many of the programs that are aimed in this country by Democrats are aimed at those who are less advantaged. A lot of them happen to be black.
It's right, very
important.
Well.
Right, but it's a very important voting bloc. That's why I think that if you have black conservatives as role models, this is a problem for them.
Well, I believe, and I'm a person that I think is a little enlightened and has done some reading, has a little bit more than just average education, whatever average is in this country, the white voting bloc, in particular those people that are middle class, which we're quickly losing, and working class people are just as important a bloc. They just haven't gotten around to the point of actually considering themselves that way, and they have to deal with a lot of the things that they hear in the media, in the mainstream media, and I consider that both left and right, because the middle always seems to get drowned out.
Well, Mick, here's the thing about
reasoning and looking at things.
Well, Mick, when we talk about the you're talking about the white voting bloc, there really isn't one. I mean, whether the white people in America ought to get together and create one, I don't know. But
if you ask George Bush if there's not a white voting bloc, if you haven't looked at the map of the United States, the last election, the blues and the reds and everything, then I think, my friend, that you are sadly mistaken.
No, Mick,
there is a white voting bloc.
No,
that's the majority of people in this country.
Mick, hang on just a minute. I don't have to look. I don't have to ask George Bush. I can look at exit polls, which I have posted in the past on our website, and you can still find it, where you can see exactly whether race or whatever, the people and how they're voting. What happens is white males tend to vote overwhelmingly Republican. But what you've got is you've got married women voting Republican, you've got single working women voting Democrat, and then you've got the different groups, such as the black voting bloc, which is, I mean, it's without question, you got 95% of them voting that way. That's who's voting right now in these national elections. That's kind of the way it's breaking down. So you've got white men very conservative. You've got women much more on the liberal side. And that's kind of how it. That's why you hear a lot of times they call it the gender gap.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, interest groups notwithstanding, you do have the black race is a special interest group, mm-hmm. and so is the white race. And
well, how so though? So, Mick, I don't
know, interest groups.
Mick, how is it? I know, but how is the white race as a group in special interest group? I would agree with you. The black voting bloc, I think, demonstrates that, but you don't have that kind of monolithic thought in the white voter.
Oh, I agree. I disagree with you totally, Doug.
Well, but I mean, Mick, you just look at the statistics
the
on this.
The picture of American life as it should be, American life,
uh-huh.
okay? You know, Main Street America, white picket fences, two-car garages, everyone, you know, marching in the 4th of July. That is an idea which has a tremendous amount of attraction to everyone, not just white people. Everyone that comes to this country as an immigrant and all eventually finds a niche, or hopefully wants to find a niche.
Nick, I agree with you on the American dream, but I don't understand how this is making your point about the whites vote in a...
They want to maintain that. They want it, and rightfully so. Everyone wants to maintain what they feel is the life and the level of comfort of life and the standard of living of life that they perceive as the best. And you can't say that the vast majority of Americans don't have that kind of idea. They don't want to live like blacks. They don't want to live like Latinos. They want to live like white Americans. And that, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, Mick, Mick, hang on just a minute here, because, I mean, you're saying a lot of stuff, and I definitely want to talk to you about it, but you got to slow down for me here. Okay, he's left the line. I didn't cut him off. But the point is that, yeah, I don't see, to me, that's a very racist point of view, which is what I was going to say. If you're going to look at it that everyone wants to be like white America, for example, which I think maybe he may be making Reverend Peterson's point yesterday, and that is that individuals are, I think, what we should look at, not race. For example, if I think it's true that what he's saying about the American dream, but I don't look at it, that's the way white people live and people do not want to live. Did I hear him right? Such as the blacks and Hispanics and the white. No, you've got people from any group that are succeeding. And we should always, I think, promote that in a positive way. This is, this goes back to really my concern about the affirmative action argument, is that there's a stigma that is attached, for example, for people who succeed at this point. Open doors should definitely be maintained, and we have laws to do that. But the idea that somehow if you have this dream, as he was talking about, the white picket fence, and you are a person of color, that somehow that's a bad thing, or that you're becoming white, I think this kind of does fit into some of the discussion we had yesterday. I think that is a very, I don't know any other way to put it. If you're identifying race as and putting people in these groups, this is where we make the mistake. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, and I certainly want to talk to you about it, because if we are using race as this identifying factor and we are not taking individuals into account, that's where I think we're missing it a lot of times, and why I was saying earlier that I think that for many black Americans, the Republican Party really is the party that is more concerned about them, because the Republican Party talks about individual liberty, the individual succeeding, getting government out of the way. You heard Don, he ran off what I would consider the tenets of the faith when it comes to the idea of conservatism. And a lot of black Americans that I run into, these are the core values that they have. And the